Who's a techno person? Huh? Yeah, I know. Sorry to interrupt your chat. So, today we're going to get to the chronology that I handed out. So if you've got it handy, you can pull it out. If you don't have one, look on. So I don't have any copies with me. There may be some around from the management, but they have passed out a few days ago. So up till now, I discussed certain problems that occurred in the previous generation and then problems that happened while Srila Prabhupada was still around. And you can see the kind of difficulties there were up till that was this big uproar with the Radha-Damodar Party in North America was 75, and at the end of 77, Prabhupada left. You can see the difficult circumstances we were working under. Now, this chronology actually begins with the first GBC meeting after Srila Prabhupada's departure. What's not really on there are certain events that happened just before Prabhupada's departure. I wonder if I can open a whole bunch of files at the same time or whether I have to do it one by one. Let me get my... Yeah. Could I block up like a whole bunch of files and it would open them all at once? I've never tried that before. Cool. Control what? Oh yeah, without going through this stupid yeah. So you could like I could like do this and then just open them all? No, it's not doing that. So. Yeah. Okay. No, it doesn't work that way. Okay. What did you say it was? Control F what? No, it doesn't work here. I got to go up here and. Yeah. Okay. Okay. It's just funny. Use this thing for years and never learn what it can do, right? I just have to get a few things open here. So in this chronology, it begins with a GBC meeting, the GBC announced a paper called "The Process for Carrying Out Srila Prabhupada's Desire for Future Initiations." A paper prepared by the GBC in consultation with higher authorities. Well, who was the higher authority? Huh? There was only one. It was Sridhar Maharaj. Wanting answers to certain questions, the GBC sent a committee to Sridhar Maharaj with these questions and got a bunch of answers and came back. So that's controversial in itself. So we can... We'll get to that, but first, I don't know how much time you would like to spend on what actually happened in 1977, but you should, of course, know that there was a series of, I guess we can call them documents that are relevant. First one in May 21st of 1977, there is the famous appointment tape. There's actually two things that are called the appointment tape. This is the one where the devotees go to Srila Prabhupada and ask him. Let me just... These documents are well known and available in websites all over the world because people are still picking them apart and analyzing them. So I don't really,
didn't really make any provision to hand them out to people as a historic record.
I do have something that you might find interesting. They went to Prabhupada in May of May 28th of 1977, and asked him certain questions. There's a GBC minutes book that says, resolve the following questions will be taken to Srila Prabhupada for his answers. They will be presented by a committee of Tamal Krishna Goswami, Satrup Goswami, Jagadish, Rupanuga, Bhagavan, Kirtananda Swami, Bali Mardan. So those are the people that went to see Prabhupada. These are their questions. There were five questions. One, how long should GBC members remain in office? And that's actually the first question that's asked. Two, how can GBC members who leave be replaced? And that question is covered. Three, in the absence of Srila Prabhupada, what is the procedure for first, second, and sannyas initiations? They never mention sannyas initiation, but the others get covered. Four, what is the relation of the person who gives this initiation to the person he gives it to? That's in the GBC minutes before this took place. Satrup Maharaj went in with a list of questions. Five, is there any provision for publications of the translations of Vaishnava scriptures by the BBT after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada? So these were the five questions this GBC committee went in with. And then there's the famous conversation, which is puzzled, baffled, frustrated, so many, and where, you know, the fate of ISKCON hangs on a diphthong or something, but when all that happens, you know, in one word there, everything, something's wrong with the way you're thinking. Anyway, so this begins, and Satrup is, as he was like the person who was the spokesperson for this committee. He had the, this is his handwriting in the book. He says, it starts, Prabhupada, we were all asked by the rest of the GBC to come and ask some questions. These are the members of the original GBC as you first made it up, this list. Our first question is about GBC members. He wants to know how long they should remain in office. Srila Prabhupada, they should remain for good. Tamal Krishna Goswami, they should remain for good. Anyway, it goes on like this. And then when Prabhupada talks about how to be replaced by election, by the vote of the GBC, then Satrup says, then our next question concerns initiations in the future, particularly at the time when you are no longer with us. See, he's got his list. We want to know how first and second initiation would be conducted. So this is the question that they're dealing with. Prabhupada says, yes, I shall recommend some of you. That to me sounds like the beginning of the answer to that question. After this is settled up, and there's some other pending business apparently, I shall recommend some of you to act as officiating acharya. Now everything falls apart. Because Tamal Krishna says, is that called Ritvik Acharya? Where did that name come from? Ritvik Acharya. You know, there's no such thing. Tamal Krishna says the best he can remember is he got the word from Pradyumna. And so, what other thing, you know? Srila Prabhupada, Ritvik, yes. And then at this point, Satrup comes in with question number four. Is it four? Yeah. He says, then what is the relationship of that person who gives the initiation? He's ready to move right on. Question four. What is the relationship of that person who gives the initiation and Prabhupada interrupts? He's guru. Satrup, but he does it on your behalf. Now, see here, whatever was going on, I think there may have been different things going on in people's minds as to what they were talking about at this point. The conversation was somewhat derailed. This is my understanding of this. And Prabhupada goes back and puts it back on track again. Yes, that is formality when he does it on my behalf. Because in my presence, one should not become guru, so on my behalf. On my order, Amar Ajnai Guruhana. He's actually Guru, but on my order. So Satsarupa Maharaj is still thinking about now rather than then. So then they'll also be considered your disciples. Yes, they're disciples, but consider who? Then Tamalkrishna. No, he's asking these Ritvik Acharyas. They are officiating, giving diksha to people who they give diksha. Whose disciples are they? Anyway, it goes on and on. And his grand disciples and so on. But Prabhupada, then, when I order you become guru, he becomes regular guru, that's all. He becomes disciple of my disciple, just see. Then it turns to the BTG questions. And then at the end, people are leaving. Prabhupada summarizes everything, as he offered did, to see that understands what's going on. Prabhupada's talking about the qualifications for people who do translations. Prabhupada then says, so the devotee said, it's not a matter of scholarship, meaning mundane scholarship, Srila Prabhupada. Then he says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Amar Ajnai Guru Hana, one who can understand the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can become guru. One who understands his guru's order, same parampara, he can become guru. Therefore, I shall select some of you. So then that was the end of that thing. I don't want to get into this whole... Anyway, for our purposes, the thing to understand, after that, they went back, and this committee wrote the answer to the questions that Prabhupada gave, which you can compare with the transcript. For the purposes of recording information, Srila Prabhupada's answers to the above questions are given as follows. 1. GBC members shall remain permanently. If a member leaves, the GBC can appoint new GBC members. That's clear. 2. Srila Prabhupada said he will appoint several devotees who shall perform initiations in the future, even after his disappearance. The disciples they accept shall be their disciples, and Srila Prabhupada will be their grand spiritual master. That was their understanding. 3. New translations of Vedic works can be published in the future, even after Srila Prabhupada's departure, but they can only be done by one who is very expert. At present, Srila Prabhupada acknowledged there are very few such men. That was the GBC's immediate understanding of what Prabhupada said. Their understanding of what was happening, Prabhupada would first select some people to initiate on his behalf while he was still present, because the etiquette is you do not do this. You do not take your disciples while the spiritual master is present, but bring them to him, which Prabhupada had said before in letters earlier. But that when, if you're qualified, if you understand the order of your spiritual master, then after the spiritual master departs, you can become regular guru. That was the understanding of this incident. Then what happened is the next thing on record is a conversation on the 7th of July. So this is toward the end of May, I think the 21st of May, 28th of May, and here in the 28th of May. Now, so early in July, so a little bit over a month later, there's a conversation which was taped, where Tamalkrishna points out to Prabhupada. Prabhupada had stopped, because of his illness, he had stopped initiating. And many people were being written in and recommended. And so, in this conversation, there's a discussion about what to do about this. Should Prabhupada resume initiating or not? And that's when Prabhupada gave this list of names of people who would do everything, including select the name, chant on the beads, absolutely everything that Prabhupada did, but they would be, and they would be the ones that would be acting on Prabhupada's behalf. I wonder if this conversation, if the word Ritvik shows up in the conversation. No, I don't think it does. But their names would be set in recording in the book as Prabhupada's disciple. And here Prabhupada named seven names, then he added Rameshwara, South America. There was a notion that there'd be somebody in every geographical area. And then after thinking about it another day, he added Bhavananda and Hamsabuddha. So that when Tamal Krishna Goswami sent out a letter on July 9th, that list of names is on there. This is a letter from Tamal Krishna, the July 9th letter, which is now going by the title The Final Order. Recently when the GBC members were with His Divine Grace in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada indicated that soon he would appoint some of his senior disciples to act as Riddhiks, here's the word, representatives of the Acharya for the purpose of performing initiation, both first and second initiation. His Divine Grace has so far given a list of 11 disciples who will act in that capacity. And then here's the list of the initial 11. And it said that in the past, temple presidents have written to Srila Prabhupada recommending a particular devotee's initiation. Now the Prabhupada has named these representatives. Temple presidents may henceforward send recommendations for first or second initiation to whichever of these 11 representatives are nearest their temple, and then they may accept them, chant on their rounds, giving a spiritual name, or Gayatri thread, do everything that Prabhupada would have done, but they're Prabhupada's disciples. And that's the end of the letter. And the current case is that this is the final order. The word henceforward is in here. Henceforward is taken to mean from now on. Where did Prabhupada stop it? You know? And so that's it. And that effectively removes this from all context of even the May conversation or anything Prabhupada had ever said about initiating gurus, parampara system, or anything else. But this is this letter. And it's not written by Prabhupada, it's written by Tamal Krishna Goswami with Prabhupada's approval. So those are the things that happened. At any rate, at that time, it was understood by everybody that this was Prabhupada's way of indicating the people who would be at least the first ones to initiate after him. I don't think there was, at that time, I don't recall anybody ever thinking that they wouldn't be somehow or other gurus. There was a controversy about what their position actually was, how much they were supposed to be worshipped, what it meant to be an initiating guru in ISKCON. That was a big turmoil, but everybody understood that these were the ones. Whether they were the exclusive, only, you know, hand-picked, chosen successors, or whether it was just a group of people that Prabhupada named. The reason people are one reason behind the difficulty people have is this particular list of names. Some of them who had very recently been in big trouble or caused big trouble or would soon cause trouble afterwards. There's the two that Prabhupada hesitated and thought about a while, Bhavananda and Hamsabuddha. We've heard something about the difficulty Kirtananda had caused at one time. Tamal Krishna Goswami, well, he was always, we used to call him Turmoil Krishna, whatever, with his fate. Two of them, by the way, were householders. People were not very advanced, so people just cannot understand, you know, how Prabhupada could have possibly thought that these people could have been gurus of any kind whatsoever, and therefore he could not have intended them to be initiating gurus. That's sort of the argument. He could not have done that. And especially if you ascribe to the view that Prabhupada knows the future just in the same way that the past is knowable by some omniscient being, then Prabhupada knew what was going to happen. He couldn't have meant these people to have done anything. That's the argument. All I can say is there are certain things that, of course, no one can understand because it's Prabhupada's decision, and Prabhupada was on a quite a different level than we are. One thing I can understand when I look at this list is these were Prabhupada's best men. They really were. I have to say that. They were his, in the sense that they would take up responsibility. They would work very, very hard, and they would, you know, were shedding blood to carry on Prabhupada's mission with what, however many defect and false ego and all that other stuff. They were his best men. For myself, when I heard my godbrother start to say, you know, they weren't good enough, I can only say, why wasn't I any better? I mean, as Prabhupada disciples, we are all supposedly equally recipient in the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and I can only say, you know, I should have been better, that's all. And why wasn't I? I am always mistrustful of people who say that, you know, my difficulties in Krishna consciousness is because other people aren't Krishna conscious enough. I think this was part of behind that. Anyway, those were the people. Then what seems to have happened is there was an agreement by the GVC, as I've heard, that they're going to hold off and not do anything, start initiating. This is at the Prabhupada's funeral. They're going to hold off and not do anything, not initiate, until they have the Mayapur meeting, when they'll sit down and decide what to do. They won't start acting as gurus with Guru Puja, Vyasasanas, initiating disciples, and all those other things. However, I heard at least that Kirtananda started anyway, and there may have been others. Prabhupada had to stop both Kirtananda and Hamsadutta from receiving Guru Puja while Prabhupada was still on the planet, and called it a premature attempt. So some people were a little eager. So then at this GBC meeting, where everything is supposed to have been what a guru is supposed to be like, at least Kirtananda had already set something into motion on his own, and was going to seem to stick by it quite vigorously. And he was in many ways a kind of a pace setter for the rest of the GBC. Now I want to what I've got out here is the GBC resolutions, which are very interesting. These are the original resolutions, So this is the resolutions of the 78 meeting in March. Now, this one, the first resolution passed about this on March 19th was, the GBC will consider each year at Gaur Purnima the appointment of new spiritual masters to be approved by a 3/4 vote. However, for 1978, no new spiritual master shall be appointed other than the 11 selected by Srila Prabhupada. So the GBC had the clear idea that they could be added to, and that the GBC was supposed to do this. Then later on, that was the morning of March 19th, and the afternoon of March 19th, these particular meetings recorded the morning and afternoon session and dated each resolutions. They decided, this is what it says in the books, a committee of Tamal Krishna Goswami, Hari K. Swami, Kirtananda Swami, Satrup Goswami, Rupanuga Prabhu, and Japataka Swami will report to the GBC as soon as possible regarding the 6 questions on the GBC agenda concerning the initiations. Definite statements on this subject will be made available to all the devotees after the GBC considers this committee's report. Pretty mysterious what's actually happening from the meetings, but what's happening is this was the committee that was going to see Sridhar Maharaj. The list of 6 questions doesn't appear in the books. And at this point, if you really want to find out, have to do a little research. I did see, and I probably have somewhere, I just couldn't locate it, a transcript of the meeting with Sridhar Maharaj. That was available. It was taped and transcribed. And one time I read it. Because, of course, it became controversial afterwards. Then on the March 21st, there's no report, but this difference is now there. A GBC committee will be formed. consisting of GBC members who are initiating gurus. They will choose new gurus once per year in Mayapur. This is an amendment to the resolution of March 19th. So you see, they started out the meeting with one idea, that the GBC, by a, what was it, three-fourths majority, will choose who's going to be a new guru. After they come back from Sridhar Maharaj, it's no longer the GBC body. It's a GBC it's a GBC committee of initiating gurus who will choose. So that's the one change that's on the records. Now, what I can remember about this meeting with Sridhar Maharaj, when it was talked about this selecting of new gurus, that the GBC should do it, Sridhar Maharaj did not like this idea. And I remember reading a statement by him, how can they, and also if there's some problems with gurus, who's supposed to deal with it? And Prabhupada did not think the GBC should do this. He saw those 11 as, Sridhar Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj saw these 11 as Prabhupada's chosen men, or words to that effect. Your Guru Maharaj's select men, his chosen men. And I remember the phrase, how can the unfit judge the fit? In other words, these were the fit. Now, he gave many good instructions, but he definitely had this, reinforced this notion that the gurus were somehow the fit and the select few and the appointed ones. He had in his mind, it's clear to me from reading this transcript, that these were the successor acharyas. It became controversial because later on, in 87, Jayapataka Swami published a paper where he laid the formation of his own acharya system a great deal at Sridhar Swami's feet. And then follows that Sridhar Swami wrote back, and you know, there was a whole controversy about this, who is to blame. Certainly I wouldn't want to scapegoat him, but it's clear to me also that he did not, still did not much appreciate the idea of a GBC. And for myself, when this reform movement got going, to me, the primary issue was the authority of GBCs over the gurus. Because what happened is, this Acharya committee really became the power center of ISKCON. The GBCs who weren't Acharyas were relatively powerless, because even if they would have a GBC zone, somebody else was initiating, but all the manpower was that person's exclusive. They were all that person's disciples. They all had primary allegiance to him, and pretty much whoever was the GBC was greatly marginalized. And at any minute, you know, and this is what happened. Like, for example, one of the things that used to happen in Canada, all of Canada and North America went into collapse at a certain point because Kirtananda Swami, he was the initiating guru for that area, and he would have his disciples in the Canadian temples, when they did Sankirtan, send money to New Vrindavan, outside of the zone, to his thing. So the temple president naturally are a little upset by this. There's no discussion, there's no dialogue, he just, you know, gave the order. And when the temple presidents politely protested, he just ignored them. And then finally, they got a little more vigorous. He proclaimed the temple president an offender against the spiritual master and told all his disciples they should leave. And then Northern Canada went into something of a collapse. Canada went into something of a collapse. Eastern Canada, from which it is yet recovered, I think. Those are the kinds of things that would happen sometimes. So those are the power relations. So they did, and so this the paper's also somewhere in my files. Again, I couldn't locate it in time for this session. But It's there. And it's interesting to compare, which I did at one time, the GBC paper, the process for carrying out Srila Prabhupada's desires for future initiation, with a conversation with Sridhar Maharaj. So already the other thing that had happened is that made things complicated was this going to Sridhar Maharaj. Certainly he was a very senior, very advanced devotee. It became controversial and people had different quotes from letters of Prabhupada, where early on when devotees went to Bhan Maharaj's ashram and had gotten reinitiated by them, he sent them to Sridhar Swami's ashram and said, he's my Shiksha Guru and so on like that. I have full faith in him. But then later on, Prabhupada also said other things about Sridhar Maharaj. He's the best of the lot, at least he's following the principles, which is a faint praise, I suppose, and in that context. And in a letter to Rupa Nuga, telling him to be very careful about associating with his god brothers, he described the role that Sridhar Maharaj played in the breakup of the Gaudiya Math, and especially that he was the one that was behind appointing Ananda Vasudev as the Acharya. But Sridhar Maharaj, in his conversations with the GBC, did not at all dispute. So here was a person you could think, for whatever reasons, did not ever have much sympathy for this idea of a GBC, and that's the person they went to find out what is the position of the gurus, and he put them, he was clear to him that they were the chosen people. And this later became a whole great deal of mischief. But then at that time, people noticed that Sridhar Maharaj seemed to be quite an advanced devotee, certainly more advanced than anybody else in ISKCON. And so they would go to hear him and hear from him and receive very nice spiritual instructions and things like that. And that became a little difficulty because then Sridhar Swami was sort of working in ISKCON. But then, you know, ISKCON would have certain procedures, like if somebody wants to take sannyas, his background should be checked and make sure his wife's being taken care of. And, you know, there was a whole list of things and put on a waiting list, which I thought was generally a good idea to do things like that. But people would go to ISKCON devotees would go to Sridhar Maharaj, and he would quite spontaneously give them sannyas, for example. And the GBC is busy passing regulations for ISKCON trying to run the society in a responsible way. And Sridhar Maharaj did not feel himself bound by those regulations. Because obviously, first of all, he didn't appreciate the idea of the GBC to begin with. And second of all, he's a senior person. We're all like little children. We should be coming to him and sitting at his feet and submitting our questions to him. I mean, that was the natural order of things. That's etiquette. And some GBCs didn't appreciate, didn't seem to understand this fact. So this is the root, I think, of this difficulty that started with Sridhar Swami. When people later on, when some gurus got rebuked by the GBC, they went to Sridhar Swami and complained against the GBC, and he was generally quite sympathetic to them. Well, anyway, the result of all this stuff is that what we later called the Zonal Acharya system was put into place. A guru had an initiating zone and seemed to have the same relationship to that particular part of ISKCON that Prabhupada had to the whole of ISKCON. The idea was that all the new initiates in the zone would become the disciples of that person. And there was a system of three Vyasasanas in every ISKCON temple. There was Prabhupada's Vyasasana, and it was flanked by two lower Vyasasanas. The one, I think usually on Prabhupada's right, was the exclusive Vyasasana for the Acharya of that guru zone. The other was called the guest Vyasasana. If any visiting Acharya came, that person would sit in the other one. And that was the furniture arrangement in this case. The other thing was, during Guru Puja in the morning, where we would do Guru Puja for Prabhupada, the local acharya or any guests acharyas would sit also on the Vyasasana, and Guru Puja was offered simultaneously to Prabhupada and to one of the successor acharyas. That was another practice. It was also understood, one last thing, it was also understood that all of Prabhupada's, all of the acharyas' godbrothers should also treat them almost like they were their own spiritual masters. They were really, that was the system. Okay, any questions now? Go ahead.
Recently I read an excerpt from a book by Kamal Krishna Goswami. I think it was one of his books where he recounts the last moments of Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somewhere from July 77. And he described how Prabhupada could not sleep at night because the thought of how to continue the whole session was very much bothering him. And then at night he wakes up to Kamal Krishna and asks him, so you the devotees amongst yourselves, have you chosen the one who will continue the succession after me?
Mm-hmm.
And Kamal Krishna answers, no Prabhupada, we decided that there is nobody who is more qualified than others, so we will continue together. And then Prabhupada relieved says, yes, each of you can be an acharya in your own zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still a little surprised by that because I believe that the zonal acharya system was some kind of a concoction that appeared later. But from this quote, it would seem that Prabhupada himself had that idea too.
Well,
how you would treat such a
problem. Yeah, I was. Tomal Krishna later talks to his understanding. I don't know how accurately Prabhupada is quoted in that one. That's the first thing. I mean, I think that's his diary. He says that.
Yeah,
that's his diary. And the other thing is what Prabhupada actually meant by that. Each of you shall be an acharya in his own zone. That's not exactly clear either. This had, what we were trying to do now, we have to understand, had never been done. It just never been done. And to me, it's entirely natural that in this case, when you're doing something that had never been done, when you're going to have a single institution in which many different spiritual masters and their many different disciples are going to have to work together in a cooperative and unified way, just hadn't been done. How to do it, and to me the only way you can do it is try this, and if that doesn't work, try this, and if that doesn't work, try this, till you finally find what works out, you know. So, I think it was very difficult for anybody to foresee exactly what, because it seems to me the only way you can do this is just by trying to do it, and see what works and what doesn't work. And the Prabhupada himself said he used the trial and error method, so I don't think it's unbona fide.
Hmm?
Prabhupada said, I can't find out where he said it, but it was quoted to me a lot. Prabhupada said, you learn by experience, and experience means you make mistakes. Yes?
The same one?
Okay. Yeah, where?
I always understood that Prabhupada gave quite clear instructions, especially on very major and sensitive issues, that you shouldn't contact your godbrothers. So to this day, I've always had this conception in my mind that that was like a major mistake to discuss.
Yeah, a lot of people think that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people think it was a big, big, big mistake. And probably if we had to do it all over again, we wouldn't. we wouldn't. But he was senior, he was much more learned in the tradition. I think Prabhupada had mentioned him about, you know, if you have any questions, see him about some matters. Exactly what he said is thought by different people. Some people thought Prabhupada said that if you have any questions about gurus, you should go see him. Other people said if you have any sort of technical questions about the formalities of worship, you should go to see him. What exactly? I think the fairest description about Prabhupada's attitude toward Sridhar Maharaj is that he had mixed feelings. That's my own conclusion. He had mixed feelings.
What about Prabhupada? I heard that Prabhupada has said that his two worst enemies were his bodyguards and Radhakund Babaji.
I never heard that, but I can see why he might have said it. It was pretty heavy when we first started to go to Mayapur for pilgrimage. Prabhupada was giving a hard time by his godbrothers. But Sridhar Maharaj was not a particular person who gave a particularly hard time. Some people were really quite... I mean, they tried to stop Prabhupada getting land to build the temple in Mayapur, for example. Some of his godbrothers did like that. That's one thing. Yeah?
Actually, there's something recently that the Prabhupada actually didn't appoint the gurus himself, but said that the GBC should do it, and that message was blocked by one particular person because he felt that if the GBC would choose, then he wouldn't have been one of the gurus.
Another conspiracy theory. I don't know anything about that. All I can tell you what the document says.
This story comes from Bhakti Churi Maharaj, and it was written and revealed. Haven't heard about that?
No. Is that a reliable source?
The person that came was Prabhupada appointed the 11th person, and he said that they should decide between, you know, GBC should decide if they qualify.
Yeah.
And then this person who got this list, he didn't say that they qualified as this other person.
I don't know.
And then later it came back, it came back to Prabhupada.
This is a new story to me. You want to collect all the versions of what happens. It's quite a library. All I can say, and anybody who really wants to write a history is going to have to sit down with all those versions, take all the versions, and evaluate who's reliable, who's not reliable, which are consistent and not consistent, and find out what happened. But I'm telling you the upshot, these 11 people became the gurus, and whoever was on it and not on it, there was a lot of problems over the course of time, as you can see. Let me just get my... notes up here. Okay, excuse me. So, protests began rather quickly about this. They thought something was wrong. And the clearest statement of protest was this letter from Pradyumna, that Pradyumna had written to Satsarup Maharaj. And I think it was reproduced in the GBC minutes. I'll read it again, if you want. It's quite a good letter, and really, when this guru reform movement got started, and I was put on the committee to figure out what went wrong. Somebody sent me this letter in the mail. I don't recall ever seeing it before. Or maybe I didn't, it just at that time didn't make a big impression on me. Somebody sent me the letter in the mail anonymously, this Pradyumna letter that he had written to Satsarup Maharaj. This was on the 7th of August, 1978. This is, you know, not too far after that GBC meeting. Pradyumna he was Prabhupada's secretary in Sanskrit, and Prabhupada had given him the job of continuing Srimad Bhagavatam. So actually that letter was written from Vrindavan. I forgot to put it on the list. And he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, that was a pretty important position. And so he wrote to Satsarup Maharaj, and he said that he's been staying in Vrindavan and not visit around, but he hear these certain stories, and this is what he says. The matter concerns the godbrothers who were selected by Srila Prabhupada to accept disciples. He Pradyumna fully believes these are the ones that Prabhupada selected. At the time of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, it was most clearly understood by all of us present that Srila Prabhupada had made no successor. Everyone admitted that fact and understood it clearly. Instead, the GBC was to jointly manage all affairs of ISKCON, just as had been the case previously. In other words, the GBC is put in charge and the GBC manages the society. This was the same solution as desired by Om Vishnupad Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also had not made any successor, although his wishes were not followed. In addition to the GBC management, Srila Prabhupada also selected 11 somewhat advanced disciples to grant initiation to newcomers. However, it was never mentioned at any time by His Divine Grace that these 11 were to be known as acharyas. He simply instructed that they may now accept disciples. Otherwise, as it was understood and practiced at that time, there was no special position given to these 11, either in the society as a whole or in relation to their other godbrothers. Management would depend on the joint GBC and among godbrothers and sisters, all on the same level, with the exception of some special regard and respect shown to older senior disciples by these godbrothers and godsisters who are junior. Now, at present, I understand the 11 gurus are all, one, adopting the title of acharya, two, sitting on high vyasasanas in front of Srila Prabhupada's vyasasana and their own godbrothers, three, accepting worship in great respect normally reserved for a guru from the rest of their godbrothers, and four, that the previous GBC zones have all been given by mutual agreement or by invitation among the different acharyas. Now he then discusses the word acharya in three different senses. One who practices what he preaches, the one who grants initiation is another sense of the word. Thirdly, the word acharya indicates the spiritual head of an institution or pit. This meaning is very specific. It doesn't mean just anyone. It means only one who has been specifically declared by the previous acharya to be a successor above all others to the seat of the spiritual institution which he heads. This is the nice phrase, the successor to the seat of the spiritual institution which he heads. He, alone among all of his godbrothers, is given a raised seat and special honor. No other godbrother may receive such respect, and he is the authority in all spiritual and material matters. This is the strict tradition in the Gaudiya Sampradayas. So Pradyumna was acquainted with this tradition. This is generally how succession has been gone on. An acharya would appoint his successor. In fact, the traditional place that an acharya appoints his successor is in the first line of his will. His whole institution is like his personal property, and he wills it to his successor. And what does it say in the first line of Prabhupada's will? It says the GBC should be the ultimate managing authority for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is the strict tradition in all the Gaudiya Sampradayas. Now, Srila Prabhupada, it is clear, did not appoint any such successor because no one of his disciples at present is advanced to the level of Krishna consciousness necessary to assume such a position, nor did Srila Prabhupada make 11 such acharyas. This was never mentioned by him. They were only given permission to make disciples, and the GBC was to jointly manage materially and spiritually. There was never any distinction made by Srila Prabhupada between material management and spiritual management. Both are the concern of the GBC. The 11 gurus may be known as acharyas only in the second sense to their disciples as mantra-giving gurus, not in the third sense as the spiritual successors of Srila Prabhupada. That was never meant by His Divine Grace. So then he goes and talks about the various etiquette that's being violated and so on. I don't have time to read this whole letter. But that was the very precise, very clear letter. Satsrup wrote back. I don't know what he answered, but I believe it was fairly sympathetic. But at any rate, nothing happened. I mean, Pradyumna's protest got buried in history somehow or other. Because in the next big, there was the next big crisis that took place. What time do we go to?
11.
Okay. The next big crisis that took place was in Vrindavan. in February 79. I don't know if this is before or after the GBC meeting. I think before. Maybe after. Anyway, there's a fat paper, a 36-page paper, called Presentation to the GBC. It had 21 signatures. And it's basically sort of along the lines of Pradyumna's letter. There was no mention of a Ritvik system or anything like that after Prabhupada's departure, but merely that people had assumed this position of successor acharyas. Not as clear as Pradyumna's letter. It was 36 pages. But there was some kind of confrontation. I wasn't around. I only heard about this. But there was some kind of very heavy confrontation with GBC members and people in Vrindavan. And Pradyumna was there. And part of the upshot of that is that Pradyumna ceased to be the translator of Bhagavatam and it passed to Ridayananda Maharaj after that. And that some of the signers was Yasoda Nandana Swami, who later became a very heavy Ritvik Jagat Guru. Jagat Guru Swami is now left ISKCON as independent operator. Went to Sridhar Swami first. Danadhar was a signer, is now sannyasi. Ajojapati, who's Bibi Govinda Maharaj. There was a whole bunch of senior people who registered a protest there was a big confrontation, and the GBC decided at this time, you know, that they had to be heavy. I mean, they were the gurus, because this time there was a great deal of anxiety. There was thought that you really have to establish the authority of these gurus. We have to have everybody has to have the same enthusiasm for them that we all had for Prabhupada. Actually, I have some testimony about that from there was a statement made a number of years later. We had that big Istogosti in New Vrindavan in 86, and let me find it. Somebody remembers what they did at that time. I'm sorry, I don't have this marked. Let me look at the page 6. Vipamukha Swami. There's a big Easter ghosty in New Vrindavan, and various people are getting up and talking. And actually, there's a transcript of what was said that was published, because the word later came out the whole Easter ghosty of Prabhupada disciples was totally offensive, blasphemous, contentious. So he says, my name is Vipramukha Swami, and I'm now preaching in New York. Perhaps some of you may know me in my more vigorous days as Bhakta leader in England. There are a number of devotees here who were working with me at the time, including Dhanavir Prabhu, Vichitravirya Prabhu, Bomadev, and others. I would like to describe a little bit of the history of what I saw to be what was called at that time the smooth transition. After Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, I perceived that there was a need to have someone like Srila Prabhupada as a figurehead to replace Srila Prabhupada in position in our society. And I even understood from, next as an inaudible sentence. So I began actively cultivating the Bhakta program newsletter and began preaching among the devotees in the English Yatra. Devotees came from all over the world to see how we were making so many devotees, because he was like the big cheerleader for the, he's coming clean about it. I began preaching very enthusiastically that these ISKCON gurus should be afforded the same kind of respect that was afforded to Srila Prabhupada. Now, I would like to change my position. I was criticized once by one GBC man that I was the person beating the drums, so therefore I had no right to make any comment. But I would like to say that because I was one of the first ones beating the drum, that I should have some right to make a comment. I feel that we have made some mistakes in the way we have presented the ISKCON Acharyas in the absence of Srila Prabhupada's physical presence. This was in, we'll get to this later, but in February, or no, September of 85, there was a huge emergency GBC meeting in Prabhupada Istogosthi in New Vrindavan, where a kind of revolution took hold. And I'll discuss that in detail, but that's just that was Vipyamukha's testimony at that time. What was going on? Beating the drum loudly, because everybody was nervous that, you know, the transition would be made, that the authority would be there, that you needed somebody to accept Prabhupada's position. But as you saw in Vrindavan already, people were very nervous about it. And then in 1979 also, let's go back to the GBC meetings. Who was on the GBC meetings for that year? The GBC meeting was in March, so that was this crisis in New Vrindavan, and Vrindavan happened in February. So then there was the GBC meeting, and there's one resolution on the books regarding gurus that the GBC secretary will write a letter to all ISKCON centers warning about the poison activities of Kailas Chandra Das. He is a mysterious figure who appears many times in this narration. And he once told me that he considers himself a servant of Lord Shiva, whose idea is to purify things by destruction. He was there and a mover and shaker at that first, at that incident, in Vrindavan, and a very, very vigorous, virulent, and relentless critic of gurus. And so here they already said that his activities are mentioned as poisonous. Then there was a crisis in Bombay Temple, also sometime around 1979. And one of the manifestations of that crisis was Amogha Leela's channeling of Srila Prabhupada. You know about this? Oh, this is far out. And I got them. I got the documents. They were passed around. It's very funny. There's these photocopied sheets that have no name, no date, no nothing on them. But they were passed around the movement a little later than 79. I don't think I saw them until about 81, when there were people that were real true believers. In the Juhu Beach Temple, I think Amogha Leela, who had a position as a bhakta leader. And so his idea was to take all the guys and fire them up, you know, the new guys, and worship the acharyas. And I hate to say his name again, Tamal Krishna Goswami was one of the acharyas at this time. And the story is that, you know, he came to Bombay Temple. The Vyasasana they had for the Acharya wasn't big enough. He wouldn't come into the temple room until they built another one that was bigger. And I mean, there's all kinds of stories like that. So there was something of a crisis that went along. The people who had personal conflicts between, on the one hand, announcing to new bhaktas that these people are the way, the truth, and the light, and on the other hand, having personal dealings with them that were quite different and kind of trying to adjust the relativities of the relationships there. And especially since there was a mood of great heaviness that, and again, the real thing, part of it was just that somehow or other people felt that for the movement to go on, the authority of these people really have to be established in a big way. So Amogha Leela, who it turns out before he was a devotee was some kind of a psychic, started channeling Srila Prabhupada. I think he was automatic writing. You know that he started writing, automatic writing. Prabhupada would start to talk to him. He would ask Prabhupada questions. And the reply sounded a lot like Prabhupada, you know. Really, I mean, it was really good. And the issue on people's mind, the main issue from this time is simultaneous Guru Puja. Because the effect of the simultaneous Guru Puja is, if you are a god brother of one of the new spiritual masters, you had to attend their Guru Puja. You had no choice in the matter. And so, you know, it was a thing where you'd take flowers and you'd offer it to Prabhupada. And then you're going to have to take flowers and put it at the feet of, you know, that guy you used to roommate with and, you know, and your god brother and put it at his feet. You know, if you didn't, you were branded as envious or something wrong with you. And anyway, you had to stand there while they were being worshipped at this simultaneous Guru Puja. So many people felt intuitively there was something wrong with this simultaneous Guru Puja. And there was something really the matter with it. And so there was it was becoming a controversy. And in these psychic communications with the Moga Lila, people were bringing this problem to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada didn't approve, Prabhupada in quotes, didn't approve of this this simultaneous Guru Puja either. And I remember one of the passages was, the Moga Lila says, well, Prabhupada, they say that if the Guru Pujas are separate, everybody will come to their Guru Pujas and no one will come to yours. Prabhupada, let them worry about their Guru Pujas and I'll worry about mine. Because in one way, you see, in the voice of Prabhupada, somebody could get on their case, you know. Nobody else could criticize, but now it was Prabhupada, and so he could put them in their place, you know. Who do they think they are, and, you know, what is this? And again, I wanted them to be spiritual masters, but now they think they've become so big and so on like that. And so that was an enormous controversy. And then later the Amoga, there were some people who really were true believers that this was Prabhupada. By the way, it kind of degenerated. After a while, the later papers, people were coming to Moga Lila like he was the oracle, you know. Prabhupada, I'm thinking of getting married, but I'm not sure whether, you know. the quality of the communications somewhat deteriorated. And I was never a true believer. Later on, during the crisis with Kirtananda, Moga Lila channeled again and said that Prabhupada told us that we should accept Kirtananda as a great devotee. And so I told him, I think somebody else is broadcasting on Prabhupada's channel, you know, and I don't know who it is. And now I understand he's also recently began doing this, so it's again began channeling. He's telling us that Narayan Maharaj is okay. Anyway, you can take it for whatever they're worth, but don't take him as Prabhupada's authority. I think that would be foolish myself. Then something started to happen also around 1980. And this involves Jadarani and Kailas Chandra. They got married. The same mysterious Kailas Chandra is now in L.A. And Jadarani and Kailas Chandra, at least Jadarani was very visibly distributing papers all over the place, which people call the Jadarani papers, although Kailas Chandra told me he wrote most of them. There were five papers, the first one called The Appointment That Never Was. And there was another one thing that must have been Jadarani, because she did not like, she thought Prabhupada Lilamrita was enormously offensive because it made Prabhupada human. Too human. Prabhupada is some kind of described as having worries or concerns or things like that. Her idea of Prabhupada was always that if there was a noise in the next room and Prabhupada said, what's that? That was Leela. He knew what it was and he was just being one of us. That was her idea. And so she thought that Prabhupada Lilamrita was treated him like an ordinary human being who struggled and so on like that. So that one, that was another one of the papers. The position of Jadarani and Kailas Chandra is that the guru, whoever gives initiation, must be a self-effulgent Mahabhagavata Acharya. And they, of course, had quotes all from Prabhupada about that the guru has to be this person that is apparently not only a pure devotee, but somehow we can all know exactly, self-effulgent. I mean, to me, when people say self-effulgent, I say self-effulgent to whom? It doesn't exactly solve all problems. And when Prabhupada talked about self-effulgent, it was almost like the verdict of history. You would see later by their activities that they were the people who were obviously the self-effulgent acharya. Otherwise, you have competing self-effulgent people. Anyway, the guru must be a Mahabhagavata, must be a certified resident of Goloka Vrindavan, must be completely free from all material desires, must be Trikyalagya. All these are the characteristics of the spiritual master, and there obviously isn't any such person like that. And the people who are now initiating gurus were never intended by Srila Prabhupada to be initiating gurus. The appointment that never was means that appointment transcript that I said, she said, had been faked. She said that if you look at it, it's incoherent. And actually, there are various clicks and pops and noises and changes in the background. And it's clear that whatever Srila Prabhupada said had been doctored by the GBC, because Prabhupada could never have possibly thought that these people could be gurus. They also said that as far as the idea that the Ritvik thing would continue after Prabhupada's death, so I guess that idea was floating around. That was the first I ever heard of it in the 80s. This is completely unshastric and unbona fide, and they rejected that. So her position was is that there's no one qualified to be an initiating guru, and that when the self-effulgent acharya emerges, then again people can take initiation. So we should wait for the acharya. Jadarani's legal name is Judy Guarino. So Ridayananda Maharaj called this Judaism, or waiting for the Messiah. It's kind of funny. But that was her position, we have to wait for the self-effulgent acharya to emerge, and until that time, no one should take initiation. That was what was in those papers. Maybe I better stop this. We're running out of time. The one last thing that happened, well, there's a lot of stuff in 80. Then there's this paper that came out of Western Zone, the position of the initiating guru in the Western Zone, USA. This paper was written by Shubhananda and a group of other people, but it had Rameshwar's endorsement, and this was making the position that the guru does not have to be, the guru can be a Madhyama Adhikari. That's what we have, our Madhyama Adhikari gurus. And as such, they should not be treated so exaltedly and so on. Rameshwar had moved his Vyasasana out of the temple room under the persuasion of some of his god brothers and was taking a lower profile, and this was advocating that everything that needs to be done as a guru can be done perfectly well by Madhyama Adhikaris. They don't have to be Uttama Adhikaris. And there was, the GBC descended upon, or the Acharyas descended upon Rameshwara, who later described his endorsement of this paper and his moving the Vyasasana out as a suicidal impulse. And descended upon him, persuaded him he had made a grievous error, and the GBC wrote a response which was signed by the executive committee, Bhagavan Das, Jagadish Das, and Bhagavan Das Goswami, Jagadish Goswami, and Jayapataka Swami, which made the case that the guru is an Uttama Adhikari. So that was then, the debate was deframed as whether the gurus could be a Madhyama Adhikaris, or whether they were Uttama Adhikaris. Well, yeah, they, you know what they did? There's a one passage in Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, where there's a description of the Uttama Adhikari Guru who's known by his preaching activities. And that was the proof text that they used to show that they fit the qualifications. He's known by his ability to convert many people to Krishna consciousness, which they were, in fact, or somebody was doing. was going on then. So, a few more questions? Or, yes?
What happened, I think, when Prabhupada was going to exchange between Pradyumna translating Bhagavatam and
Lakshmana, the certificate and everything? Yeah, I guess Pradyumna had written that letter, and then he was part of this group that thought there was a big problem with the gurus. There was a confrontation. I wasn't there. I heard it was very heavy. Very, very heavy confrontation. People were hiding from other people, and there was something like that. And the result was, one of the results was that Pradyumna did not continue as the translator of the Bhagavatam. What I heard, one thing was he was incredibly slow. It was very, very, very slow. And the other, which was another controversial thing because people didn't like that, the BBT didn't like it that he was so enormously slow. But guess who the BBT was in the hands of? And then the other thing was Pradyumna was quoted as saying that the issue is what is the guru? Pradyumna says, in my purports, I'll show them what the guru is. Which, if he said that, was not a smart move. So somehow or other, he was involved in this, and that's what happened. And I really don't know anything more about it. I really don't know. Anything else? Yeah?
What is going on with Pradyumna
now? Well, Pradyumna is sort of living like an independent scholar in New York, teaching Sanskrit on the side. People see him every so often. He's a very interesting and unusual person. Prabhupada called him an American smarta. He thought it was kind of a sort of unique thing, but he was. And Prabhupada also called him Panditji. So he really is. He's a real scholarly kind of guy off in his own world, you know. But and I don't know. The GBC did finally issue an apology to him for the way he was treated, because apparently it was super heavy, and the fact that the letter he wrote was for the most part pretty dead on, and so they offered him an apology. But I don't know what. I haven't heard what, if any, his reaction is to that. Anything else? So we'll continue the saga tomorrow. Huh? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Got up to, we're in the 1980s in our counter history of ISKCON. Yeah, well, since somebody, you know, people read Prabhupada Lilamrita, you know. Well, this, of course, Lilamrita stops already, but this is kind of other history, the anti-history or something. So I gave you that chronology of events, and there's something that you should pencil in there for 1980s. That I mentioned there was a kind of debate going on whether the initiating guru is can be a Majjhima Adhikari. That was what came out of the Western zone, whereas other people said there have to be Uttama Adhikaris, and there aren't any, and you should just wait for one to be self-manifest. And then out of Dallas, Texas, the GBC again issued a paper making the case that the zonal acharyas could be considered Uttama Adhikaris. In May of 1980, I found the details out from Prahlad Nandaswamy. There was a GBC emergency meeting. Technically, they're called extraordinary general meetings, but everybody refers to them as emergency meetings. So the GBC meets once a year, and if something comes up and they all have to convene, this is known as an extraordinary general meeting. And the issues that they had to deal with were dubious behavior on the part of Hamsa Dutta Swami, three acharyas, who one group was arguing on the one side that they were Uttama Adhikaris, and the other side what to do about Hamsa Dutta Swami Jayatirtha and Tamal Krishna. And those are three major problems in the 80s. Jayatirtha and Hamsa Dutta are very well known. They've been the subject almost of Hollywood movies. The Monkey on a Stick, a screenplay, was for sale for a while and looked like somebody almost bought it, movie rights to it. Tamoko Krishna Goswami had finally left Bombay Temple, the second level of leadership, finally thought he was too heavy. He came back to America, settled in St. Louis, began to expand his zone, and again seemed to believe that the way to be an acharya was to be super heavy. He was never implicated in any illegal activities or any fall downs or anything like that, but he seemed to have been preaching even that the only way his god brothers could go to Prabhupada is through him, and things like that were there. And so that was a crisis with Tamal Krishna Goswami. With Hamsa Dutta, he had begun his rather interesting career as a gangster. He actually, was putting out records, and he have you ever seen a guru like me, gangster, prankster? That's what he said of his own mouth. Jayatirtha was at that time a householder, and he was behaving in very extraordinary ways, like having kind of wild shrieking kirtans that went on for hours and hours and hours, and people thought there was some sahajya contamination, and as a result he was given sannyas. I should mention at this time, in some ways I was in some ways not directly affected with these matters, because I had been a temple president in North America from 71 until 78. In 1978, stopped being temple president, I became worked with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I finished my doctoral dissertation. It was some of the happiest time of my life. I just wrote a doctoral dissertation, finally got that thing finished, wrote articles for BTG magazine, and did kind of scientific preaching and everything. And so I was not that much directly involved. Where I did get directly affected by affairs in ISKCON, it was pretty horrible. But all this stuff was going on, and I wasn't really directly into it. I didn't really get involved until a little later. But let's when things began to develop. But this was the beginning in 1980, where there began to be the first real problem with initiating gurus. Then there was a very famous Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hamsa Dutta, after this extraordinary general meeting, a team of GBCs went to each of those people and heavied them out.
All the GBCs.
All of them?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He was there. He was a eyewitness. Go ahead, tell
us. They all went to Los Angeles, and there that's where they dealt with Hamsa Dutta and with Jayatirtha. And then they came to the Middle American Zone, the Midwest Zone. They first went to Dallas, then they went to Houston, And then they came out to Chicago, mm-hmm. where Tom Krishnamurti was.
Mm-hmm. At that time, huh?
Yeah.
And what did they do with these different people when they dealt with them?
You already said when they went to...
Yeah,
so they had their meetings.
So Tomo Krishna actually went back to China, right? Hamsa Duda. And Hamsa Duda, what was he actually supposed to do? I forgot. Yeah, he was, anyway. He was having, part of his problems was the kind of Sankirtani he was doing and where he was doing it. But there were other problems beginning to surface. I don't think they quite recognize him, involving intoxication, illicit sex, and guns. He was,
well, there's a newspaper article about his grenade launches.
Yeah, I know. That was a little later, I think, that all that stuff happened. Then what, but there was this very interesting incident of which was recorded, which is called the Pyramid House Talks. In Topanga Canyon, some devotees had a house that was shaped like a pyramid. It was called the Pyramid House. And there, Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hamsa Duda came and spoke to people. And Tamal Krishna, at that time, said that he confessed to the fact that we misunderstood what Prabhupada meant when he wanted us. He said, we were thinking that we are the select few, that we are the chosen ones, that it was us and nobody else. But actually, and there was some amount of pride and some amount of ambition, he said, and these things, we misunderstood his instructions and his order. It's just that Prabhupada selected some of his somewhat advanced people. He indicated them as the people who could begin initiating, but actually he wanted so many people to be initiating gurus, and we took it as our exclusive right and privilege. That's basically what he said at the Pyramid House discussions. Those have also been distorted by people that where Prabhupada says that Tamal Krishna is supposed to have said, yeah, Prabhupada wanted only to be one of these people to be Ritviks perpetually. But that's not what Tamal Krishna ever said. He said what it is, he wanted us to be gurus, but we just misunderstood, thinking this is elevated to so far above everybody else, and that we were the chosen few. Tamal Krishna said that at that time. But also what had happened, I'm not quite sure of the chronology, I think after these talks, the mood changed back and forth. And Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hamsa Duda went to Sridhar Maharaj. Yeah, well, he did go to Hong Kong, right? But somehow or other, they ended up with Sridhar Maharaj at this period of time.
From there, then they went Hamsa Duda, and then also Tamal Krishna Maharaj, they flew to India from there.
Yeah. Then there was Sridhar Maharaj. And this is where things get a little... this is an added complication at this time, because Sridhar Maharaj tended to back them up and support them against the GBC. And the mood of contrition was lessened after this encounter. Sridhar Maharaj still saw them as they had originally described themselves, as Prabhupada's hand-picked men, as his chosen successors. And he thought that the GBC, I must admit, when the GBC and the Bhagavan and there were other gurus, when they dealt with people, they were heavy. I mean, it was heavy out time on all sides. And so the method of dealing with people were really quite brutal. I want to get the GBC resolutions up. Here they are. I've gone out and looked, extracted things from original GBC resolutions, and they're quite revealing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
If Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained that we made a mistake, we weren't supposed to be the only Acharyas, if that is what he said at the Pyramid House, why then later going to Shiraswami and being accepted again as the hand-picked chosen one?
My judgment about Tamal, my experience of Tamal Krishna Maharaj is he changes his mind. Other people see wheels within wheels within wheels and complicated plots. I don't think that's the case. Whatever he does, he's very heavy about it. But he changes his mind and sometimes gets influenced by different people around him, like many people. So I think that's what happened. He would get in one mood and one way, and then things would happen. And
he had just been asked to leave. Go to China.
Yeah.
He wasn't feeling very, I was his secretary at that time. He wasn't feeling so enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
accepted it. So then on his way over there, he stopped in L.A. And I guess that he revealed his feelings at that particular time.
Yeah, on the way. Uh-huh. In the GBC meeting of March 81, there was... The GBC issued another paper, again reconfirming the system in spite of the turmoil being caused now because people are finding out something's, you know, there was this problem with Tamal Krishna, something strange about Hamsa Duda. The paper came out called The Descending Process of Selecting a Spiritual Master, in which basically the standard system was upheld. They did add that now that when the Acharya Standing Committee selects somebody to be a guru, that also has to be reconfirmed by 2/3 majority of the GBC. They started to get the idea of bringing the GBC more into the process. That happened, and then. But then in 81, by unanimous decision of the Governing Body Commission, there shall be a separate special Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada in the temple. So that ended this simultaneous Guru Puja. Then there were two Guru Pujas, one after another, in the temple room, one for the Prabhupada, and then one before or after for the local acharyas, contemporary manifest acharyas. So that was changed. Then in 81, you start to see this interesting sequence of resolutions. It starts like this. This is from the original resolution book, so you can sort of see what happened. First, that a letter signed by the Governing Body Commission members is drafted by HDG Srila Jayachitra Swami, which includes the additions given by Tririshi Das, be sent to HDG Srila Hamsaduda Swami, and that a committee of, I'll just leave out all the stuff, Bhavananda Tamal Krishna Goswami, Jayachitra Goswami, Bhakti Swarup Damodar, and Tririshi meet personally with Srila Hamsaduda. Then the next day, Bhavananda Das Goswami, Tamal Krishna Das Goswami go to meet with HGG Hamsaduda Swami and will dedicate their hearts to stay and talk with him as long as necessary. Then a few days later, if Hamsaduda Maharaj tenders his resignation from the Governing Body Commission, then the GBC chairman is empowered to accept it. Means later in the year, you know. Then, a little later on, if there is any attack in any way from Hamsaduda Maharaj or of his men on any devotees or any ISKCON temples, he will be suspended from ISKCON until the next Mayapur festival. The officers' committee has the right to put the suspension into effect. So there's trouble brewing, as you can see from these resolutions. They were actually afraid of physical attack.
In 1980... Or what had happened is that it's in 81, and they had the meeting in 81. At that time, Hamsaduta had stormed the Berkeley Temple.
That's right. So that's after this resolution, but he did storm the Berkeley Temple, right? His men came in, and it was. We don't have to get in all the details about Hamsaduta. You can read about it. Monkey on a stick. No, actually, there was the same guy in the San Jose Mercury News. I'll get it typed up and post it on a website. The same guy did a series, a couple of articles, very straight journalism, called "Crime in the Krishnas." And among other things, this journalist was very, very good at getting people to talk to him. And Hamsaduta opened up his heart. And it's all in the newspapers. I have it in my files, of course. So then what happened in 82 was then there was another interesting GBC meeting in 1982. One thing happened in 82 is, first of all, they got rid of the Acharya Committee. You know, the special Acharya Committee. And then people became initiating gurus by 3/4 majority of the GBC present. They then added 1, 2, 3 more people as initiating gurus and talked about their qualifications. So the GBC actually was trying to now expand the number of initiating gurus, in order to not make it so exclusive and all that stuff, yeah?
Who are these people who have added in
the... You want to hear their names? Okay, just for the record. Some are still with us. Pancha Dravida Swami, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami, and Gopal Krishna Goswami. Those people were added at that time. I think that was the first time they added people. Then, and there's a whole list of different qualifications. And then it says quite simply and tersely, and there's a whole story behind this, that Jayachitra Maharaj is suspended from his duties as of GBC and initiating guru. And what had happened was, I wasn't present at this time, so I only heard the stories, but it's quite a story. And somehow or other came out that people were getting worried. I heard tapes. It was like a scandal. People passing around tapes of Jayatira the Kirtan. There was shrieks and hollers, and Kirtan's going on for hours and hours and hours, and people saying, you know, this is ecstasy and everything. Well, it turned out that he was medicating himself with LSD. And I guess this has been going on for a bit of a time. Jayatirtha had been in his, before he became a devotee, a fairly close associate with Dr. Timothy Leary. Yeah, he lived with him, and, you know, what was it called?
Millbrook,
right. The East Coast branch of the acid movement, as opposed to the West Coast Kim Kesey. And it's where they would sit and take LSD under control conditions, reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So that had been his thing. A person, Atreya Rishi, who was very one time close to Jayatirtha, told me that the reason that Jayatirtha began to take LSD was that he thought that, you know, he's now been selected by Prabhupada as the initiating guru and therefore a Mahabhagavata. And people were thinking this way, that he was supposed to be a Mahabhagavata, and therefore he should be seeing in ecstasy Radha and Krishna, and he wasn't. And this really put him in a state, and so somehow or other, I don't know exactly how it began, he took LSD and there they were. Yeah, it was Radharani's mercy, and so he evolved a little breakthrough theology that in this age we need a little help. So he had been rather regularly taking the sacrament, as he called it. Had a little box, the sacrament box. And there was a little group of people that knew about it and were, you know, I mean, facilitating it, and this had been going on. And it turned out that Rameshwara actually knew about this for some time and didn't share this knowledge with other members of the GBC. And so it was somehow it all came out at this 82 GBC meeting. And at first the GBC was, they had trouble dealing with this again. So much was invested for the movement in these individual people that for one of them to fail was so massive an occasion that it was very hard to deal with it. You can understand that. And people would think, well, you know, like Lady Macbeth, you know, a little water clears us of this deed. You know, it's real easy to get rid of and just fix it up. Yeah, you promise you won't do it anymore. Okay, it's all over. So that was the tendency of people initially to deal with these problems. But I think the temple presidents were considerably more upset.
What was happening is that they found out that he had pictures of, because he had gone to Sridhar Maharaj, and so now he wanted to accept Sridhar Maharaj.
But that was after he was...
Before. So there was a big debate amongst the GBC about what to do about it, because they were afraid of a split.
Mm-hmm.
So because they couldn't deal with it, Bhagavan, I was the temple president at that time, so Bhagavan came down to the temple president's meeting and explained the situation, you know, and what should we do about it. So of all the people, you know, I think like the chairman that year was Chipperari, and he said, you know, we've got to deal with it heavily. So, you know, the temple presidents decided that we can't have a split. Either, you know, he goes, either he gives up Sridhar Maharaj or he stays in ISKCON.
Mm-hmm. So there were two things in initially was this, his affiliation to Sridhar Maharaj and the LSD, right?
The LSD wasn't really the issue at that time. The real issue was his affiliation with Sridhar Maharaj.
Oh, but then the LSD thing came out too, right?
What happened
after he went?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
In other words, then Brahmaswara,
I'm sorry,
who had the inside story on what was going on.
And he told everybody.
Then he told everyone.
Okay, I'm sorry. So that was the sequence. What the initial issue was the discovery of his having pictures of Sridhar Maharaj, and that became an issue. Then they said, you know, he has to give him up. Then he left, and he went, as they used to say in those days, across the river to the Sridhar Maharaj's mat. And then Rameshwar finally told about that.
Before he left, they had him did a videotape where he admitted all his, you know, faults and mm-hmm. Some of his fall downs. And then he crossed the river.
And he crossed the river, right?
All this tape was all bogus. They made me do it.
Yeah. So then there was a race to the west. Who would get there first? To all of Jayatirtha's disciples all over England and America and everything. Would he and his men get there first, or would ISKCON people get there first? I remember hearing about that one. To tell them, you know, what was going to happen. So there was a major split with him. So again, the Sridhar Maharaj thing complicated things on this matter, because after he went, you know, Sridhar Maharaj, at least for some time, was supportive of Jayatirtha. Yeah?
I think Jayatirtha probably made a tape to kind of entreating his followers to be loyal to him and follow him. And
yeah.
There was one person with that tape, and somebody else had to try and head him off at the park.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. There were so many little dramatic stories, you know. So that's what happened in 82. In 83, they removed Jayatirtha officially. Liberalized. Again, try to make it more open to become initiating gurus, not so exclusive. I think there were more people who became initiating gurus in that year. No, they're not. Let's see. Then you can start to see in the 83 resolutions, Kirtanananda Swami is starting to become an issue. Because this is when they passed the resolution, the title Founder Acharya and Founder can be used only in reference to Srila Prabhupada. Because Kirtananda was the Founder Acharya of New Vrindavan, and people said, wait a minute, I thought that was Prabhupada. And that all his kanchanyasis must carry their dandas for a minimum of 10 years, including initiating gurus. And that this resolution that ISKCON is appreciative of the wonderful contribution of HDG Kirtananda Swami Bhaktipad and New Vrindavan had made to Krishna Consciousness Movement by constructing the Prabhupada Palace. The GBC has heard a personal request by Srila Bhaktipad to allow the present system of dressing Srila Prabhupada in the palace to continue. Although the system does not necessarily represent the consensus opinion of the body, out of our respect to Srila Bhaktipada, it has been decided not to change it. He had Prabhupada dressed in the crown of a king, a scepter, and a royal purple cape with ermine trim. Fake, I suppose, but the Bhaktipada is king thing. And this disturbed a lot of people. The GBC thought it was weird and off, although they couldn't quite put their hands on what was wrong with it. And he said, it's my realization. And so you can see already there's starting to be a little difficulty. Then things got worse with Hamsa Dutta over the course of that year. The newspapers picked up on what's going on. And in 64, I think there was another extraordinary general meeting at which he was actually removed. And it's put here as by the GBC meeting of 84, resolved that Hamsa Dutta Swami is hereby removed from his membership on the GBC. I mean, they really were mad. His position as a BBT trustee, which of course the GBC had turned out in law courts, didn't really do, and his position as initiating guru, he shall no longer be considered a sannyasi. All ISKCON corporations are hereby advised that Hamsa Dutta is no longer qualified to serve in any authoritative capacity relative to such corporations. All of Hamsa Dutta's disciples are directed to accept initiation from another ISKCON recognized guru. That's the first time you see a resolution quite that heavy, actually in the GBC books. So it had gotten pretty bad, and the Berkeley newspapers were in on it, and it was quite a scandal because it discovered what he was doing with he had his arsenal and a kind of survivalist thing. So then what began to happen was this is where in 1984 in September of 1984, in a little temple in Tuaco, New Jersey, a little northwest of New York City, there was a routine meeting of the North American temple presidents. And the GBC had, in some ways, been trying to change things, but everyone was quite discontent. The GBC in 85... passed different that's getting ahead of the game. We go back to 84. So there was this meeting in Tuaco of North American temple presidents. I forgot the minutes.
You're with me, I think. Yeah.
Back home. In my room. Anyway, it was a routine meeting about Sankirtan, and they started to talk among themselves. And had discovered that almost everyone was deeply convinced that there was something very, very wrong with the way the gurus had been established in ISKCON. And they did a survey, and they said this is a problem, and it's something we have to deal with. Now, one of the effects of this 76 fratricidal war that we talked about a few days ago was that after that happened, Prabhupada had to some extent empowered the second level of leadership in ISKCON. Before, the GBCs would make resolutions, read them, announce them to the temple presidents, and that was that. After that year, Prabhupada said the temple presidents should be allowed to, should be handed the resolutions, and they should be able to review them and make their own ideas for changes, amendments, improvements, additions, and send them back to the GBC. So after that, after 76, for some time, the second level of management was considerably powerful in this way. They were included much more in the decision-making process with the GBC. And so when the North American Temple presidents met in Tuaco, this was recalled, that before, you know, when the GBC was quote-unquote off, Prabhupada, you know, the temple presidents did something about it, and now we should do it again. And they were all quite fired up that something should be done. And I think Trivikram Maharaj had written a short paper that people saying these things that people had gotten behind. A little bit of time thereafter, from Los Angeles, a paper came circulating. You have to remember, this was before the internet, before email. We didn't even have fax machines. I think there was not fax machines available, huh? There was telex, but the technology that fueled the communication that was now readily available to everybody was photocopying. So people would photocopy things like crazy and mail them out. That was how things spread. It wasn't until a few years later that everybody had fax machines. This paper came from L.A. I think it was written by Veera Bahu, mostly, called The First Thousand, meaning the first thousand gurus. And the point of this paper is, you go through and you find the quotations from Prabhupada that he said over and over again he wanted all his disciples to be spiritual master, all his disciples to be gurus, and there was, again, directed against this sort of exclusivism of a handful of people being initiating gurus. It was felt that it was too much for people to handle. That individual devotees were now getting the disciples up to the four figures, huge numbers of disciples, and people thought that sometimes they were suffering as a result of accepting karmic reactions from those disciples. And they were, with that many people, just given too much of a burden to deal with, and also the center of more attention than maybe very many mortals except extremely advanced devotees could handle. So the idea that became current was that one way to remedy the system is not to make this business so exclusive of being an initiating guru. So that paper came from the West Coast of North America, and it was extremely influential. Now, this is where I was in Philadelphia working with the BI and doing stuff like that. I wasn't a temple president, but then I realized that really the purpose of this, that one thing is about the people who are the zonal acharyas or whatever, is they took on a lot of responsibility and they worked very, very hard. And Prabhupada was continually looking for people who would take responsibility. And when he found somebody who would take responsibility, he was very, very grateful. Now, many of these people took responsibility. They had faults and flaws and shortcomings, as we've all seen in great things, but they would take responsibility. And so then I realized that to have anything happen, first of all, any of us who thought that we could do something, we had to convince Krishna that there were other people who would take as much responsibility and willing to work just as hard as the acharyas, whoever, but were maybe free from some of the same anarthas. In other words, you couldn't just be an armchair critic. And this was the other thing. And that was the real person. If you wanted to see ISKCON changed and purified, Krishna had to be convinced that there was some alternative to whoever was doing things. So those are the principles that, that at least I was trying to push as the person who was, at that point, a sort of paper writer and intellectual of the reform movement. There were plenty of people in that movement who were revengeful, punitive, resentful, and who wanted to purify others as a substitute for purifying themselves. And I could see that happening also. So there were the these other groups of people. So, I wanted in some ways to minimize the influence of those people. So anyway, we had this this meeting in Tuaco, these two meetings. Then there was a GBC meeting in 85, where again the GBC is now starting to feel something's happening and there's some issues. They passed a resolution in February of 85 that said that the GBC zonal secretary, whether initiating or not, is the ultimate managerial authority within his zone as the official representative of the GBC body. I mean, it's far out that has to be a GBC resolution in 1985. But the fact is, and that now they want to affirm the fact that the GBC is actually the ultimate managing authority and not the zonal acharya. Sometimes, of course, they were the same people, which raised another interesting problem. Then they passed a resolution: an initiating guru may belong to any ashram. Yeah. There were the time that it was pretty much thought by everybody that an initiating guru had to be a sannyasi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they immediately, Bhagavan immediately took sannyas in Jayatirtha. Yeah, that's right. That year also they added Bhaktitirtha Swami, Jagadish Goswami as initiating gurus. But here I'll read you some more resolutions.
Jagadish,
so it says, Jagadish Goswami is empowered to begin giving diksha initiations. 85. Agrani Swami is empowered. So they add some more. Then there's this resolution, or Gorgovinda Swami. Notice now they're empowering. There's this vote. Worship of Anacharya outside of his Prabhudatta Desh. Now this word starts to turn up as the zone of a guru that he was running was then called his Prabhudatta Desh, the space given to him by his spiritual master, I think is the meaning of it. Worship of an Acharya outside of his Prabhudatta Desh is not obligatory beyond ordinary etiquette according to any sannyasi or senior Vaishnava.
That's referring to the Vyasa.
Yeah. Then they mention that no books published by Hamsaduta or any of his followers should be purchased by ISKCON temples or devotees. When a GBC body gives their blessings to a candidate to initiate, it is for a particular guru datta desh. If he wants to change his area, he has to go back to the GBC. All new initiates must vow at the time of initiation that they accept initiation by their guru into ISKCON to civic succession, whose founder acharya is Srila Prabhupada, and whose ultimate managing authority is the GBC. All disciples must offer Guru Puja daily to their spiritual masters. All acharyas should personally make it clear to their disciples that he is not offended if his godbrothers do not chant his pranam mantras in kirtan and do not attend his Guru Puja. That was 85. Yeah?
And you mentioned that there was two to get a good one to the other.
Yeah.
But that solved the problem, because people in France, you know, Bhagavan was asking his godbrother to attend also.
Yeah, he would ask that.
And otherwise, they would have to leave his zone, you know. Mm-hmm. They were unwanted.
Sure. I know that. Yeah. I know this stuff. What happens next? Okay, maybe let me just see. We are up to after that GBC meeting. There was then in 85, there were two meetings in New Vrindavan. August of 85, and then in September of 85. The first one in August was the North American GBC and Temple Presidents meeting. And then in September was another extraordinary general meeting, and also Istogosti of Prabhupada disciples. What happened in the August meeting, the North American GBC got together, which was a lot of people, and the temple presidents came together, and two things happened. One, I finally came out with a paper which is called Under My Order, in quotation marks. It says on the thing, it says On My Order, but it's Under My Order. And that paper is basically, I had, as I mentioned, gotten a hold of Pradyumna's letter, and based on Pradyumna's letter, I then wrote a diagnosis of what went wrong. And that paper was very, very effective. It was passed out at that meeting. And that paper was immediately very convincing to a lot of people, sort of like to a lot of people left a nail on the head that instead of having a kind of a movement where you could have many gurus working together in one temple, instead we had done what Prabhupada said not to do. We had made successor acharyas but just divided ISKCON among them. And my major concern was that ISKCON is gradually fragmenting. There was more unity in these zones when there was a single acharya than there was as ISKCON as a whole, and that we hadn't that the GBC had in fact disobeyed Prabhupada's instructions. They had tried to establish a GBC in charge, but they had failed because of this zonal acharya system. That was that paper, I finally have it in a format. If people want, I can. I can see if people want to print it up and can get it tomorrow. It's up to the powers that be how much money they want to spend on you guys. The other thing that happened is Bhavananda Swami confessed. Bhavananda Swami, there had been rumors about him having sexual relationships with other men. And what happened is a young man in the Atlanta temple came to the temple president with a very disturbing story the previous year in Vrindavan. While he was standing by Bhavananda to give him massage, Bhavananda had made physical sexual advances toward him. And the guy left and was very disturbed and was thinking, well, you know, Socrates and the Greeks, maybe this is what sannyasis do. And yeah, he had all, you know. But finally, he was so disturbed, he finally told the temple president. And we got a notarized statement. And there was a three-person committee. Trivikram was on it, and Balavant, and I forgot the third. We were supposed to meet with Bhavananda with this signed, notarized statement by this young man. And their first occasion to do this was in New Vrindavan. They were all together. And they met with, it's just told, see what I mean about Krishna's hand? It was total coincidence. It wasn't a plot or a scheme, at least on any human part, to have this happen. So Bhavananda was there. They had a little meeting with him. They confronted with him, and he confessed. He admitted it, which is probably always a mistake in terms of politics. But this is what he did. And at the same time, this paper Under My Order had gone out, and people were endorsing it, and some GBCs were persuaded, others not, but the temple presidents were really behind it. It was kind of a rallying point. And then when Bhavananda confessed, it just knocked the sails out of everybody who was on the GBC who was present. I mean, they were just floored. They couldn't, another one down, you know. And that's when Balavanta, who at that time was the GBC chairman, then called for an extraordinary general meeting for September in New Vrindavan. Bhavananda, quite humble, went up to New York, had Easter Gosti with his disciples, explained to them what had happened. He had been, was then at this time suspended as an initiating guru, and that's where things stand. And so tomorrow we'll wrap this up with what it, what happened. Okay, any questions? Yes.
That words of Sri Prabhupada which strikes us very deeply, that your love would be shown, will be shown by your cooperation.
Yeah.
But those things in the was not spread or discussed among the disciples at that time.
Yeah, people talked about cooperation. You have to understand that there was this among the acharyas, there was a feeling, at least this is what we who are not privy to the inner workings trickled down to us, that there was a feeling that among them one would emerge as the self-effulgent acharya. And that there was a rather intense feelings of competition as to who that would be. It didn't foster cooperation. And then when like Hamsaduta was removed, some other acharya would gobble up his zone, reinitiate all his disciples. It was just somebody came in and then bam, it was done. So whoever went down, somebody else increased. And then in America, there's a rhyme for children, I guess, to teach children how to count backwards. 10 little, 9 little, 8 little Indians, 7 little, 6 little, 5 little Indians, 4 little, 2 little, 3 little Indians, 1 little Indian boy. The report was that Kirtanananda Swami Bhaktipad used to go 10 little, 9 little, 8 little gurus, 7 little, 6 little, 5 little guru, with the idea that the one who would be left standing would be him. And there was almost a notion like being a guru, these people who felt they couldn't take it. They couldn't take it and it destroyed them and there would be some kind of survival of the fittest. That was a notion that was floating around. How true it is, I don't know. Certainly everybody didn't think that way. But at least the more prominent candidates in their own minds for self-effulgent acharya certainly were. Yes.
When you share all these things with us, it's like a personal question now. How much is that really your personal endeavor to do that, and how much is what you're doing here backed up by the GBC? Are you aware of people who would think that you shouldn't tell us all these things, or is this your initiative?
On the one hand, you know, you can read a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's out and about, and people know about it. It's no longer state secrets, except for a few details and some names. It's no longer state secrets. I imagine that a number of people in the GBC would say that I'm not helping people's faith and confidence in ISKCON by doing this. I don't think that people should have faith and confidence based on illusion. I have total faith and confidence in ISKCON myself, and I know the worst. And you know, during all of this time, it was possible to be a devotee and make spiritual advancement. It was possible to get up in the morning, go to the morning program, preach Krishna consciousness, chant your japa, and make spiritual advancement. And that's a fact. And it seems, anyway, I also think that if you don't look at what happened and don't understand what happens, you might have a tendency to repeat the same thing all over again. You know, they'll come in a slightly different form. The next Hitler will not have a little mustache and a slice of hair, but it'll look quite different, but it'll still be this, but you'll be able to recognize if you know what the real thing is. Uh-huh.
And observing all these different stages, is there something like a pattern you can see? Is there a development? Just go somewhere?
What?
Well, different things that happened, and then there were changes incorporated in let's say
in the GBC.
Is there a development? Is there
I don't know if I know enough to say if there was a real development. There were obviously people on the GBC was not one thing. There were acharyas and there were non-acharyas. And they were in the minority. The GBC at this time had a rule that almost anything that was passed was by two-thirds vote. And which meant that a small group of people could stop anything from happening. So a small group of people was really in charge of the GBC. But the GBC was quite divided. And one thing I have to point out, which is a very good thing to point out, is that this whole process was at least tolerated by the GBC. If the GBC had ever told me, stop, I would have stopped. If they ever said to any of us, stop, we would have stopped. Because our whole point was that we wanted to establish the fact that the GBC was the ultimate managing authority. We could not do that by going against the GBC. We would just be undoing by action what we were professing in theory. So, and you'll see later on when it finally came to a reform of the GBC through this 50-man committee, everything was done by GBC sanction. It was unlike this present ISKCON reform group, which claims to be modeling themselves in this earlier event, there's a big difference in this way. We never did anything without the GBC's at least tolerance on that way. So when you see the GBC doing things, they were under some kind of pressure to change, but some people didn't want to give an inch. Some people, you know, Kirtananda was still doing simultaneous Guru Puja, even though the resolution said differently. He didn't obey it. So he was kind of a real, I guess you'd call it, extreme right wing kind of a guy on this matter. And so there was like that. It's hard to figure out what was happening, yeah.
I understand that you were telling this story mostly from your own experience in North America. But I was just curious if you have anything to say about the position the Harish Prabhu took while all of this was going on.
A little later on, I guess, we'll talk about it. I don't really know too much about him. One thing that happened is there was a dealing. By the way, I did leave things out. There were events in India, which happened at this time. Which started to happen, I'm not covering those. This is what I know, and what was going on in Europe, as I don't know exactly. But at a certain point during this time, in 85, there was a Bhakti Dayal Swami was in Hungary, and he had some affiliation or liking for Sridhar Maharaj. And Harikesh and his people dealt with him very, very heavily. He was preaching in Hungary, and to get in and out of that country in that time, he had many passports with different names. And he had a center in Vienna, and there was a kind of a raid of the center where the place was trashed. I mean, it was really like, you know, oh, you're under arrest. You know? It was very, very heavy. And people were instructed to psycho-terrorize him. And all his fake documents were collected and sent to the Hungarian state police, which was over the top. So then Bhakti Dayal came to America and showed up in my temple with the quote-unquote Philadelphia Brahmins with his complaint. And so we worked very hard to let the GBC give him a decent hearing. So that was one thing. That was one thing that happened. Harikesh himself did not trust this movement at all. He was very, very. Although there were certain aspects, at least of the Zonal Acharya system, I think that he never was comfortable with. He also was very freaked out about the reform movement in America. That much I know because we later came head to head in the GBC meeting. Yeah, he didn't trust it. So this was considered to be these radical American temple presidents, and
Parikesh here in this zone seemed to be fairly aloof. In England, no, Bhagavan zone was really solidly against it. His second level of management had a plan to limit the power of the Acharya by essentially trying to tie him up in red tape. They wanted to keep, that's what it seemed to me, that they were proliferating systems and subsystems and, huh?
Sindarup, who was at that time a Maharaj, he had this idea of having different layers of responsibility, instead of, you know, vertical,
horizontal management,
right, with a whole paper and essays in a way of restructuring its kind of solve all the problems.
Right.
He presented to the BBC, they let, you know, Bhagavan was successful. He was the biggest book distributor in the world, making most money, etc., etc. So naturally, everyone wants to follow the leader. And they said that this is the model of success for our society. This will change our society. Mm-hmm. We have great relationships amongst the devotees, very intimate. And so that, I mean, Sindarup had all the best intentions for Bhagavan. Matter of fact, he was the one who put forward the idea that you should have one acharya, and this one acharya will be the sitting up. This is how you model things. And even Bhagavan, his reform at that time, but yes, if we had more gurus, but we should have different tiers of gurus.
Yeah, the two-tiered system.
Yeah, the original guys are the acharyas and everybody else is mere gurus. That one was floated, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was another one. Yeah, the two-tiered system. That was his, huh? I was the one who came up with that one. Nobody would admit it was theirs. You know, they had their fingerprints on it. One thing that happened, is that when Bhavananda confessed and left in a contrite mood, he went, got together with Bhagavan, and Bhagavan turned him around completely. Bhavananda became some kind of symbol or something Bhavananda became some kind of symbol for Bhagavan. And so when they came back for the so-called emergency meeting, the mood was of Bhavananda was completely different, and there was a New York Ratiyatra first, and Bhavananda and Bhagavan, they're all marching in the front, and everyone's like, it's like power, you know. So that had happened. So what was happening in North America was ardently opposed. We have to end right now. We'll have to finish the story as far as we can tomorrow. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.